Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, Indian Chief. For my life with songs of grief, with the yellow fear and philosophies. His temper all the times, the times I've
tried. Court appointed. Two Dudes Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer due to judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Man, I'm sitting here before we started enjoying my Cheetos crunching away. And then I realized I'm not going to be able to eat them while we're doing our episode here.
That would be rude to our guests, our listeners, with you crunching in their ears. A lot of people listen on headphones and stuff, and that would be very rude to sit here and hear crunch, 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 crunch.
Maybe we could do like the court-appointed podcast hour sponsored by Cheetos, like the boys did the Totino's hour on Mid-Bam.
Yeah, that's right. I wish I had Cheetos money. Someday I'm going to get rich and make Cheetos money.
I can give you some Cheetos money. Just let me touch it after eating some Cheetos. It'll be orange as all get out.
I don't want dirty money. I want Cheetos money.
I remember I had this one little children's book when I was a child, which is usually when children have children's books. And it was a Pink Panther book. And I must have been eating some Cheez-Its or some Cheetos or something. And I remember I turned all the pages orange on it. That was my first experience with Cheetos fingers. And the funny thing is, I was looking through some of the, because when my mom and dad passed away, I ended up with some of the things. And one of the things I had was that book, which I still have. And I looked through it, and sure enough, the Cheetos stained pages were still there.
Still stained with your little Cheeto prints.
That's right.
It'd be like the book, Who Moved the Cheese?
I don't know that book.
You don't know that book?
I don't.
Let's talk about your cheese. You got to see who moves the cheese.
Well, if it was who cut the cheese, I think I know who did that. That would be you.
Hey, we're remote. There's no way that you would know that.
But just from years of experience of being around you when I was younger, I can attest to that.
Well, I always say if you're in another room, it doesn't count.
Or if you're in another room, it really counts.
Well, what I mean is if you're in one room and somebody outside the room hears you and questions you, hey, I'm in another room. It's none of your business.
What about if they like happen to walk in like right after it happens?
Well, that's just their poor luck. It's just their misfortune.
Somebody comes in and starts sniffing around. You're like, what's that smell? I don't know what you're talking about. I don't smell anything.
I don't smell anything at all, and I'm leaving. It's like your mother used to rush in the bathroom after every time somebody'd come out of the bathroom, she'd rush in there and start sniffing around.
What'd you do in there? What do you think, Pat?
Did you light a match?
the secret though is if there is something in your room that smells a little bad and somebody happens to walk in quickly, use some very fragrant air or hand sanitizer really quickly and offer them some. Yeah. That'll mask up any smell.
And here, rub some on your nose.
It's like the stuff they use for autopsies.
Yeah, then you won't breathe any germs. It'll kill germs as it goes in.
Well, we could pontificate about this.
This subject is a gas.
But we thought we actually were going to talk about something that was somewhat suggested on the court-appointed Facebook page.
Somewhat suggestive?
Somewhat suggestive, yes, by David Harshman. He had posted David J. Harshman at that.
And, don't be harsh, man.
And he had posted a link to an article about how the New York Attorney General is filing a lawsuit to dissolve the NRA, the National Rifle Association.
And with our natural curiosity, we thought, how could this be? What are his grounds? Why would he be doing this? Is there any base to it? And will it make a good podcast?
And we weren't sure about the last one, but we thought we would do it anyway.
So. We haven't cared up till now. Why worry about it now, huh?
Yeah. So first, I have to start off with a disclaimer.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, it's never a good sign when you have to do that. There is the president of the NRA is Carolyn Dodgen Meadows. And she is the current president. She was elected the organization's president April 2019 after Oliver North was forced out of the position. So I just want to make a disclaimer that I am actually not related to her as far as I know.
Oh, okay. I thought that was one of your exes.
No, she's not one of my exes.
They live in Texas?
They all live in Texas, as do most members of the NRA.
No, oh, West Virginia's got its share.
It does. Mm. So she is actually from Georgia, and my family's been here in West Virginia since about 1750. So unless she traces her hillbilly roots back here, then I'm not related. She's not kin. She's no kin of mine.
All right. We won't claim her.
Yeah, we don't claim her. So the NRA is a very long-standing organization here in the United States. It's been around for quite some time. 9 different U.S. presidents have been NRA members. There was Ulysses S. Grant, who was actually also the president of the NRA at one point. Theodore Roosevelt, William Howard Taft, Dwight Eisenhower, John F. Kennedy, Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, and George Bush.
I noticed you didn't list Dick Cheney.
No,
wasn't a president, but still. He shot people in the face.
Yeah, he could have probably used some NRA gun instruction at some point.
Yeah, I'd say so.
The interesting thing is George H.W. Bush resigned from the NRA because there were some commercials that came out that were criticizing the federal government and the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms branch, the law enforcement. And so he resigned based upon those comments that they were saying. So he kind of wanted to distance himself for that because they were being critical of the federal government.
Hmm.
So some other interesting people who were also in the NRA, Hunter S. Thompson.
Oh, yeah. I remember the movie about him.
Yeah, he was a little out there. There's mm-hmm. all kinds of stories about him being kind of crazy shooting guns, too.
Mm-hmm.
The Oklahoma City bomber, Timothy McVeigh.
Oh, well, there you go. There's one for the other side.
Interestingly enough, Michael Moore joined, but he wanted to dismantle the organization from the inside. I don't think it worked out too well for him, though.
Yeah, I remember when he went and paid a visit to Charlton Heston's house to interview Charlton Heston, and Charlton Heston thought it was somebody in favor of the NRA, and come to find out he was being ambushed.
There's one more person who was also was a former member, I should say, and that would be me.
Well, I thought you were a member. You're a gun-toting, card-carrying guy that likes to go out hunting and have his guns and all that.
I do have guns, and I do like to shoot my guns, and I do like to hunt. I was also an NRA member for a little bit, and the only reason I was an NRA member is because there was a gun range that was by my house where I lived in Florida. And in order to be a member of the gun range, you actually had to join the NRA to become a member of the gun range.
That's blackmail.
Well, you know, I didn't understand it at first, and I didn't really like it, because at this point, I felt that some of the NRA's lobbying efforts and things going on kind of didn't really match with my views. But supposedly it was for insurance reasons, that the NRA helped back insurance for gun ranges if it was a quote-unquote NRA range, meaning that it was 100% NRA member range. So, you know.
Well, they probably figured they're going to come out on the front end on that with the forced dues that everybody has to pay. You get so many more paying in, so they can offer a little bit of insurance or something in exchange.
The one thing I could not believe during my short stint as an NRA member was all the literature and junk mail that I got sent on a daily basis. There was so much propaganda like showing up in my mailbox from the NRA. I mean, it was probably 3 to 4 items a week.
Well, just wait till you turn 50. You'll get inundated by the AARP. They send out all kinds of literature now, too.
Now, when you're talking about the NRA, I mean, you're generally meaning the National Rifle Association. But there are actually different interconnected agencies which are part of the NRA. So you have the NRA Institute for Legislative Action, which is everyone, you know, when you're talking about these NGOs, non-government or NGEs or no NGOs, that's right, non-governmental organizations. Everyone loves their acronyms, so you got to throw out these different acronyms.
Mm-hmm.
So the NRA-ILA, which is the Political Action Committee, and then you have the NRA Civil Defense Fund, which does pro bono legal work for people who have cases involving Second Amendment rights. And there's also a NRA Civil Rights Defense Fund, which was established in 1978. Now, the NRA Foundation itself is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and they donate lots of money to different kind of ROTC programs, 4-H and Boy Scouts and things like that. And that's another part of the NRA.
They donate a lot of money to politicians, too.
Well, there's another group that does that. The Friends of NRA is a program that raises money for the NRA Foundation. And they hold events and try to have fundraisers. And they've raised over $600 million for the NRA Foundation. So around 1976 is when the NRA started to become more politically oriented. And they set up the Political Victory Fund, also known as the NRA PVF. And this became a PAC, a Political Action Committee. And this is where the lobbying efforts come from. So a lot of the other things that were going on that I was talking about, those don't necessarily have too much to do with politics. So you kind of have a bit of a split amongst the different NRA organizations and what they actually do. Now, prior to 1976, when they started becoming politically involved, they were more not so much about gun rights, but almost more about like kind of a gun club, like not kind of very politically activists, if you know what I mean. And when I think of the NRA, at least what I used to think of the NRA, was not really had to do with politics. I always thought of it as more of kind of a, if you owned a gun, you could join the NRA, and they had different kind of events and gun ranges and about gun safety and responsible gun ownership and all that. I always thought of it more of kind of a moderate kind of organization. And I think it's drifted pretty far from that at this point. It seems to be pretty politically motivated, so to speak.
Well, not being a gun owner myself and not ever having the need to join the NRA or anything like that, I had always thought of them as simply being a lobbying group. I thought that's all they did was lobby for gun rights and things like that. I didn't think that they did any of this other kind of stuff, you know, gun education and all that. I didn't think that was anything. I thought it was all to do with politics.
No, I mean, I always thought growing up, and this might be just a product of my parents knowing the NRA before 1976 and having that kind of view of it. But no, it was to me, it was always more about, not about gun rights so much, but more about kind of responsible gun ownership and things like that. So I think it's definitely evolved over the years.
Well, I remember when I made the mistake I did in 2006 and ran for local office, and the two endorsements that everybody wanted to get was NRA and the pro-life group.
Yeah.
That was the ones, because they had the most money to donate to campaigns, and they had the biggest sway in a state like West Virginia.
Yeah. Well, and they do. They issue different ratings. They rate political candidates based on their positions on gun rights.
Yeah, I got an F from the NRA.
Did you really?
Yeah, they gave me an F.
So an A-plus candidate is one who has not only an excellent voting record on all critical NRA issues, but who has also made vigorous effort to promote and defend the Second Amendment, whereas an NRA F candidate is deemed to be true enemy of gun owners' rights. Tommy, that was you.
Well, I mean, I had to answer, did I have any guns? No, I don't have any guns. Do you shoot guns? No. Do you want people to have guns? No, not really. Are you against automatic weapons? Yes, I'm against automatic weapons. What about, would you do anything to try to close the loophole about guns being sold at gun shows? Yes, I would do something about that. That earned me an F.
You did not pass that test, Tommy.
No, I failed that test with flying colors.
Oh.
I didn't do well on that.
I don't know why I'm laughing, but that's pretty fun. With regards to the lawsuit, it's kind of interesting about some of the different causes of action they brought up, and I actually went ahead and pulled a copy of it. It's a quick read, coming in at just under 169 pages. So, you know, if you have a lot of time out there and want to read a copy of the complaint and see what it's all about, you can definitely find it.
Lawyers are very verbose.
Yeah, you could say that. Especially government lawyers that have nothing better to do but, you know, sit in their government offices.
That's right.
I'm just joking. I don't mean that. Government lawyers. But before we get to the actual meat and potatoes of the lawsuit, I think there might be a motion that we have pending before the court today.
Why, yes, your gunship, if we could approach the bench to pay for court costs.
Fire away. Who do we have?
We have our friends at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
So is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? Like, are you forced to go to work every day and you don't really want to?
Or is there a pandemic in your area?
That's true.
BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist.
You can start communicating in under 48 hours. And it's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online.
There is a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas.
The service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor.
You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with the traditional therapy, as well as maintaining social distancing.
I know. Have you seen waiting rooms lately? Their chairs are all spread out.
It's your car most of the time. Wait in the car till we call you. This BetterHelp couldn't have come along. BetterHelp couldn't have come along at a better time because this you can social distance your butt off and participate in BetterHelp.
BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed.
It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling and financial aid is available.
BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today.
Visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily at www.betterhelp.com/reviews/.
Join the over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health with the help of experienced professional.
In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states.
And we have a special offer for Court Appointed listeners. You'll get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/court.
That's 10% off on your first month. BetterHelp, HELP.com/court. Mike and Tommy want you to get BetterHelp today. You get how I got that play on words there? Pretty good, huh? I figured that one out myself.
That's right. So the lawsuit that was filed is kind of the culmination of a lot of chaos that has been happening at the NRA for the last couple of years. Back in 2018-2019, the NRA kind of turned into a bit of a Game of Thrones type situation.
Boy, I'll say.
So,
or maybe more like Succession.
It sounds a lot more like Succession. That's a great show, by the way.
It is. I like it. I'm waiting for season 3.
Oh, I can't wait. Do you know when that's coming out by any chance?
No, not right offhand.
Not soon enough.
It's probably delayed by the pandemic like everything else.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, not to get off too far off subject, but I know that one of my other favorite shows was not delayed by the pandemic. It's coming out in October, The Mandalorian Season 2.
Hmm. Good.
That's for all you Star Wars fans out there.
Yeah, I watched a few episodes of that.
You didn't like it?
I wasn't too excited about it. Moved on to other things.
I am smitten by The Mandalorian.
Really?
Yeah.
It was a lot of the same.
So whenever you talk about the NRA and you're talking about it in the past, say, 20 or 30 years, there's one person that comes to mind, and that's Wayne LaPierre. And he has been kind of a figurehead and executive vice president and president and really the spokesperson and the face of the NRA for quite some time. Now, he retired at some point a few years ago, and Oliver North, who everyone should be familiar with from the Iran-Contra affair from back in the 80s. He was a former Marine and kind of White House insider during Reagan, was the president. So this is where the drama kind of starts. Allegedly, North found a lot of irregularities that were going on with the NRA with regard to finances and things like that. And there are some allegations that North had tried to extort Wayne LaPierre about all the different things that were going on, that they were essentially wasting the money that was given to the NRA, that they're using it as their own kind of personal piggy bank, and taking these lavish trips and really just kind of abusing the fact that it was a nonprofit.
Well, I don't think that he retired in 2015. He's still leading the organization. I think he got a payout from a retirement plan is the way that worked, because they are still seeking part of this lawsuit is not only seeking the money to be paid back, but it's also seeking his ouster from the organization.
Yeah, I mean, I do see where he's currently in the NRA as the vice president right now, I believe. But I mean, I guess when I saw retirement plan, I just assumed that he had retired. Because generally, in order to receive money from a retirement plan, I thought you had to retire.
Well, that's where a lot of this is coming from. Is
that might be the problem to begin with.
Yeah, the money is getting moved around. And it's like all these different branches that you were listing before. It's almost like, you know, when these money laundering, like if you've watched Ozark, they have the different places that they move the money to hide it. That's what all these different organizations are about, if you ask me, is they're moving money, because you have different ones under different rules. There's an NRA, like a charity organization, that's just for raising funds.
Right.
Well, those funds are supposed to go towards nonprofit type projects. But they are finding that those funds went directly to line the pockets of the top executives there. And this money was never counted as salary or reimbursement or anything like that. And then they find where they had a guy that they paid $13.5 million to over 6 years that arranged these luxury getaways. And a lot of them were to like to the Bahamas, where they were on a yacht where top donors own these yachts. And they stayed on those. Well, that's all receiving benefits that are not expenses, business expenses that should be reimbursed.
Yeah. And I see here, too, where he received allegedly in 2017, which is the most recent year available for the tax information, $1,366,688 plus an additional $67,289 in other compensation from the organization in 2017. So he had $1.4 million in 2017.
Yeah, but that's what he reported. What they're saying is that they were taking, there was about the top three or four of them that were taking another $3 or $4 million in cash off the top. And then they were going on all these extravagant vacations for them, their friends, and their family. They were talking about one guy put his niece up in a hotel that was 8-night stay for $12,000.
Yeah, and I guess maybe what the retirement plan was is he started receiving the retirement because he had some sort of a retirement plan that had a vesting age and like a retirement age, and then he started to get those benefits because he started receiving actually an additional $4 million a year in compensation. And part of it, I think, was from the retirement plan.
Yeah, it said, while allegations of mismanagement and lavish spending by Mr. LaPierre and others have emerged, it said that the New York suit lays out a broad litany of new allegations of corruption and greed from executives who, Miss James, that's the attorney general that's prosecuting this from New York, mm-hmm. said they looted the NRA.
Yeah, so as I said, the complaint that was filed in New York is 169 pages. Now,
maybe we should explain why it was filed in New York.
Why was it filed in New York?
It's because that's where they're incorporated. You have to incorporate within a state. New York was where they incorporated in 1871.
That's right. Like I said, they have been a long-standing organization here in the United States.
Yeah, so the Attorney General files it because that's the only person really that can, because that's where they are incorporated. So it was suggested, it was suggested by Donald Trump. He said, that's a very terrible thing that just happened, adding that the NRA should move to Texas and lead a very good and beautiful life.
All those great words.
Yeah, but here's the thing. you can't just up and move your company from one state to another if they file a lawsuit. The attorney general has to approve it. Well, the attorney general that just filed this lawsuit is not likely to approve them picking up and moving somewhere else.
So every time there's a complaint, there's general things that are laid out. And one of the things they always put in there is jurisdictional. And so on the page 11 of the complaint, it says the attorney general is responsible for overseeing the activities of the New York not-for-profit corporations. Then it goes on to say that the NRA is a charitable not-for-profit corporation chartered by a special act of the state of New York legislature on November 17, 1871. Throughout its history, it has been legally domiciled in the state of New York and is subject to New York law and the governments of its internal affairs. The NRA has members and engages in fundraising throughout the United States, including New York, where it is registered with the Charities Bureau of the Office of the Attorney General to conduct business and solicit donations. And so its principal place of business, though, however, is in Virginia, close to Washington, D.C., where they can be close to the lawmakers. And the NRA has a stated mission, and there's five purposes and objectives. Would you like to hear what they are?
Yes, I would.
To protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, especially with reference to the God-given inalienable right of the individual American citizen guaranteed by such Constitution to acquire, possess, collect, exhibit, transport, carry, transfer, ownership of, and enjoy the right to use, keep, and bear arms, in order that the people may exercise their individual rights of self-preservation, defense of family, person, and property, and to serve in the militia of all law-abiding men and women for the defense of the Republic and the individual liberty of the citizens of our communities, our states, and our great nation. That's number one. It says to promote public safety, law and order, and national defense. Three, to train members of law enforcement agencies, the armed forces, the National Guard, the militia, the people of good repute in marksmanship, and in the safe handling, efficient use of small arms. That's kind of the one that I always really thought that was like their purpose.
And that would be great if that was a fact.
Yeah. To foster, promote, and support the shooting sports, including the advancement of amateur and junior competitions in marksmanship at the local, state, regional, national, international, Olympic levels. And finally, to promote hunter safety and to promote and defend hunting as a shooting sport for subsistence and as a viable and necessary method of fostering the propagation, growth, and conservation and wise use of our renewable wildlife resources.
That sounds good, too.
I'm all about that one, too.
Yeah, that sounds good, too. I just wonder, though, if the money got more important than any of those causes.
Well, much like everything, I think, was it absolute power corrupts absolutely?
Oh, yeah.
They became the biggest show in the country, and I think that probably led to a little bit of kind of maybe some of the power struggles that are going on there.
Now, this lawsuit was filed against the NRA. Shortly thereafter, the NRA turned around and filed a lawsuit against the Attorney General's office, basically for harassing them with a nonsensical lawsuit, as they determined it was. And then the Attorney General of Washington, D.C. filed a lawsuit also against the NRA for its failure to pursue charitable purposes.
Yeah, so that's really kind of where you get into it, is because is this lawsuit politically motivated, or is it actually that the board of directors of the NRA are abusing the non-for-profit status that they have by using it as their personal piggy bank, essentially?
Well, and what they're going to do is investigate that. And right now it's a lawsuit, but they're going to turn over a lot of their findings to the IRS because they feel there's a lot of income that has been changing hands and not being declared.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and generally attorney generals don't just file lawsuits like this unless they have something pretty strong to go off of. And I think this all kind of culminates when you look back at the dispute I started talking about earlier between Oliver North and Wayne LaPierre and all this about all the different kind of self-dealing that was going on there. And there's been a whole host of NRA board members who have sought to distance themselves from the NRA based upon kind of the way it's being controlled at the top.
They were talking about this. This was an article I saw written by a guy that was a member of the NRA and believed in the NRA. And he had come before any of this lawsuit was ever filed to start getting fed up with them and saying, kind of like you were saying, this is not why I pay my dues to the NRA or make donations to the NRA. for what they're doing. What they're doing is like those things that you stated that supposedly was their mission. And yeah. It said, for too long, the NRA, because of leaders like Wayne LaPierre, has failed responsible gun owners like me, is what he said. Rather than fulfill its traditional stated role of educating Americans about firearms and supporting programs to train us to use them safely, the NRA has spent the last generation focusing on politics, now entirely GOP politics, and the interest of gun manufacturers, not owners.
Yeah. So I saw this interesting quote and said, if you're a gun owner, but you feel like there should be some restrictions on gun ownership, the NRA doesn't feel like a place for you anymore. That was the NRA of several decades ago. It's not really the NRA of today, which is hard on gun rights and gun manufacturers. So like you said, yeah, it's not really the kind of middle of the road type organization that I'd always thought it was. And, you know, pretty much when I belonged to it, what I thought it should have been too.
Well, as a result of our national debate on guns, it's painfully short on facts and explanations and long on emotions and partisan bickering. And still, rather than educate all Americans about responsible gun ownership, the NRA has continually sought to divide us by focusing on the extremists while helping the manufacturers sell as much as they can for as long as they can, despite the potentially calamitous long-term political prospects for responsible gun owners. Yeah. So meanwhile, the country's current relationships with guns has, to say the least, grown increasingly problematic. We've had a rash of shootings in America in recent years, from the mass shootings at schools, shopping centers, concerts, theaters, bars, and fairgrounds that we hear about in the news, to the smaller tragedies that are hardly noticed. Elections at every level frequently turn, at least in part, on question about guns, from who has them or where and when they're appropriate to what kind of guns are available and what law enforcement can do about it.
Yeah, and so, you know, if that was the main stated purpose of the NRA and what they were doing, and that was what was going on, that's what they're lobbying for, you know, I think at a certain point, you might have to kind of evaluate, is this really a nonprofit that we want to have? But also, you know, there's also restrictions on free speech. People should be able to say what they want about different political issues like that. So I kind of have a bit of a problem with saying, let's shut down the NRA based just solely upon what their lobbying efforts are and what they're trying to push. Because, you know, I do like to think that in America we should have free speech. But the problem with the NRA, and this is what this lawsuit's bringing to light, and I think this is what we need to focus on, is that it's being mismanaged at the top. It's pretty clear that what everyone is donating money to for the NRA and things like that, that they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. And there's a lot of shady things going on between the executives in the NRA.
Well, here's the thing, too, if you look at it. If they were really doing their job in protecting gun rights, they wouldn't push to just let everybody do everything all the time. There would be times where they would say, you know what, this is better, because if we don't do something small now, then they're going to do something bigger later and take this away. You know, you have to look at what's good for the long run and not just try to, you know, it was saying the NRA's failures to actually fulfill its role of representing responsible gun owners have been on display for years. After decades of claiming that unfettered gun ownership was needed to counter tyrannical government overreach, the NRA has been conspicuously silent about injustices like the death of Breonna Taylor at the hands of police in Louisville, Kentucky this year, failing to take action on any of these types of shootings. And they just basically you know, have the one standard stance of we want guns anytime, anywhere. Nobody should ever restrict anything.
Well, and that is a product of the kind of viewpoint that gun ownership is like an ice cube and it's sitting in a glass of warm water. And, you know, any kind of restrictions on gun ownership is going to melt that ice cube and make it eventually dissolve.
Yeah,
so if you want to keep the ice cube as big as possible.
Yeah, what they're saying is they don't agree to any kind of cutback, and to them, their answer to that is that means that you're actually supporting universally forced disarmament.
Yeah, it's kind of strange, the whole argument. I mean, yeah. I understand where they're coming from. They don't want to have. They think any concessions is chiseling away. They want to hold on as much as they can, as long as they can. So that's kind of their point of view. So getting back to the actual lawsuit itself, though, I thought it was kind of interesting. The way they break it down is they talk about, and it's very well organized and very well thought out. I think even if you weren't an attorney, you could probably look at this complaint and kind of read through it. I mean, it's not super convoluted. Like I said, it's very well written. And it talks about the parties, the jurisdiction, the venue. Then it talks about the law, the different laws that there are for these not-for-profit corporations in New York and different obligations and things that they have. So it talks about what their restrictions are, what their responsibilities are, and how they're supposed to do it. Then it goes into the history of the NRA and how it was governed and the bylaws and all that. Then in part five, which gets in about page 34, so they've taken up a good amount of space there, it talks about the different violations of the NRA senior management and what they've done under the direction of Wayne LaPierre. So Wayne LaPierre is the one who has a bullseye, pardon the pun, on him in this lawsuit. I mean, he is they're taking aim at him.
Well, they even mentioned that in one case, one of his other cronies that was there, his wife had been arrested and served time for embezzling. And then they hired her to come there and work for them because she was having a hard time getting a job in her chosen craft after having been caught embezzling. Yeah. So she came there, and of course she embezzled while she was there, but they didn't charge her or anything. But I think that she was embezzling for them.
it was like a workaround. Hey, you're good at embezzling.
Yeah. You know how to do this. Yeah. We need somebody to bring out our money, but that's the whole thing. They are not, you know, this isn't somebody saying we don't like what they stand for, so we're going to try to dismantle them. They have been acting in a corrupt manner, and they've been laundering money, and they've been hiding income, and they've been taking money from nonprofit that they are not supposed to take.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, if they really believe in what the NRA wants it to do and its stated purposes and things like that, then shame on them for being so dirty like this and bringing it down, because they had so much power and the ability to do it. I mean, they could have really pushed these causes forward. So, I mean, it's kind of sad, actually.
Well, and the other thing about it, look at your common member of the NRA. And I don't know how much dues are, since I've never joined. I mean, do you remember what you paid when you had to join them?
Oh, it wasn't very much.
Like... 25, 35, 50.
Yeah, I mean, it was no more than $50.
Something like that. Well, they do that, and then they take donations from people that are like, we need these people to protect our guns, so you donate money. But a lot of them are just, you know, common rural guys and stuff, and $50 is a big deal. That might be the difference in whether they eat very well that week or pay their electric bill. But they're paying their money to the NRA, where you got guys that are making a stated salary of $1.4 million a year, and then they're embezzling another several million on top of that. And these are the people that these poor guys want to give their money to? Can they really, really do that and think this is a good plan?
Well, the problem is that they're never going to trust the government filing a lawsuit like this against the executives like that to begin with. So I think that's where you're coming from.
Well, but their problem is they should not trust their representatives to not steal from them.
That's true. So it talks about widespread violations under the direction of LaPierre. And it says there's different sections here. It says LaPierre's improper spending and expensing, Wilson Woody Phillips conflicts of interest, related party transactions and self-dealing, Josh Powell's conflicts of interest, related party transactions and negligence, John Fraser's negligence in certifications of false or misleading annual filings, improper expenditures by LaPierre's senior assistant and direct report. So those are the basic violations by the senior management. Then it goes into the NRA's longtime use of vendors and consulting agreements to hide improper expenditures, self-dealing, and related party transactions. So then they go down to break down about, like you were talking about, like using different trips to go to the Bahamas and things like that with these vendors that were set up essentially to kind of funnel money through it, is what it looks like.
There were non-bid contracts given out for millions of dollars to cronies.
Oh yeah, that can be a problem.
And it, you know, one of the things that you're bound to when you're a nonprofit says a primary responsibility of nonprofit officers and directors is the duty of loyalty, which stipulates that they must always act in the best interest of the organization and not their own personal interest. So when they move the money out of that to give to themselves, they're obviously not acting in the best interest of the organization.
The interesting thing, too, is there's one section, and it's called the NRA's Retaliation Against Dissidents on the Board. So, they're, like I was saying, there are board members who did not like this and kind of tried to bring this to light. So the interesting thing about this section, and I kind of like this, they call it the NRA's Retaliation Against Dissidents on the Board. Subsection A, Dissident Number 1. LaPierre recruits Dissident Number 1 as president and negotiates Ackerman contract. And it talks about how LaPierre recruited Dissident Number 1 to run for NRA president. And at the time, the plan was for Dissident Number 1 to complete the remainder of the outgoing president's term. He would then be renominated by the board and serve out a full term as president. So
that was Oliver North they're talking about.
Without being, you know, too upfront, we can see that Dissident Number 1 is Oliver North.
Yeah, and he may have seen what was going on and what was going to expose him, and so that's why they got rid of him.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny they call him Dissident Number 1 because it's very apparent who they're talking about. I don't know why they didn't just name him, I guess. But anyway, then it talks about other dissident board members and how they were dealt with, and then it goes on to the next section and it talks about their failures, which actually resulted in the violations of the law, which were discussed higher up in the law section. And it talks about how they didn't listen to whistleblowers. They didn't approve related party transactions. They didn't see these conflicts of interest. They didn't perform appropriate audits. They didn't do all the things they actually were supposed to. They didn't come into compliance with it. They filed false regulatory filings, just all kinds of different things. So it's, like I said, it's a very kind of well thought out complaint in my opinion. I mean, I don't know whether it's true or not because it's a complaint. You know, you don't know if it's true or not, but if everything in this complaint is true, I mean, it paints a pretty grim picture for the NRA.
And it says the primary goal of the New York lawsuit is to dissolve the NRA completely. Recent history suggests that the Attorney General can be successful in such efforts after her office filed suit against the Trump Foundation for its pattern of violating charity laws. It had to shut down. But given the NRA's much larger size, it could be far less likely outcome in this thing.
It could. And so at the end of the complaint, they talk about a prayer for relief. And that's essentially what you're asking the court to do. And what they say first and foremost is dissolve the NRA and direct its remaining assets and future assets be applied to charitable uses consistent with the mission set forth in the NRA Certificate of Incorporation. So dissolve it, sell their assets, and give it to a charity that's actually doing what the NRA is supposed to be doing. The people that are involved, to remove them from their position and bar them from their appointment as an NRA officer or director, and permanently barring them from serving as officers, directors, or trustees for any nonprofit charitable organizations in New York. So, like you said, they're asking to kind of disband it, give the money away to organizations that are actually doing what they're supposed to be, what they said they were supposed to be doing, to enjoin the executives from being able to do this kind of work later on, and anything in the classic, any such other relief the court deems just and proper. You always throw that in case you forgot to ask for something.
That's a catch-all.
Yeah, I always do that too. So,
Now, one thing that I read that I was surprised to learn, they said, in case anybody thinks, look, they're going to dissolve the NRA and all of that goes away and you don't have any of that to worry about anymore, there's another group out there called Gun Owners of America. Have you heard of them?
I have not.
They basically are like the same thing as the NRA, except they say they are actually better run, which I guess that just means they don't steal or embezzle, but they're better run and they're already a strong competitor of the NRA. So the only thing that I would say is the fact that we haven't heard of them maybe they are doing those things that are stated by the NRA that they're not really fulfilling. They're just going after the political agenda and the money. Maybe this group is actually doing those stated things that do serve a beneficial purpose.
Well, I went to their website just now as you mentioned that, because I had never seen it before. And their update, Joe Biden's VP pick cements shift to the militant, radically anti-gun left. Let's see. Attorney General Barr should stand for self-defense. Yeah, so I don't know. It seems pretty politically motivated.
Well, that could be. I'm just saying I had never heard of them. So I don't know. Maybe they don't have the money, but they say that they're better run and they're already a strong competitor of the NRA. So
the only no compromise gun lobby in Washington. So I think they're pretty much anti
right. any cut from the same cloth, huh?
Yeah, they're the Ice Cube type mold as well, I think. So
darn it. I was hoping for something more reasonable than everybody should own a gun. It reminds me of the old All in the Family episode where Archie Bunker talks about how he could solve hijackings. I mean, you know, that was the problem back in the 70s was hijackings. He said he would just arm all the passengers.
Yeah.
And when the guy stands up and says, this is a hijack, everybody fire.
Well, I mean, you know, being perfectly honest with you and with all of our listeners, I mean, this is kind of a hard topic for me because I am a gun owner. I've owned guns my entire life. I grew up owning guns. My first shotgun I had, I think I was given when I was 12 years old. I still have it. You know, it's a formidable part of my youth. I mean, that was something that we always did. We went out in the woods and shot guns, and you know, I mean, it was very kind of responsible, and I learned how to appreciate them. And I love my old shotgun. You know, it's like it brings back memories of shooting with my dad and my brothers. And you know, I mean, we used to shoot BB guns too all the time, Tommy, when I was little.
Well, yeah, that's true. I shot a BB gun here or there, but that's as far as I got. A paintball gun. I shot a paintball gun before.
You grew up in town. I grew up a little bit outside the city limits. So, you know, we graduated from BB guns to actual, you know, shotguns. So.
Well, in town in West Virginia is still it's still quite rural to most folks.
That is true. That is true.
But, you know, it's sad to me if there was a group that actually worked responsibly to solve these things, they may have the expertise and the ideas that can bring about a better way for everybody to exist. I mean, their goal shouldn't be that converse from there shouldn't be a left and a right. There ought to be something that we could do that would bring about fair play in this arena.
Oh, well, I mean, look, you know, I'm a lawyer, as you know, I say that in the beginning.
And a judge and a dude.
And I am all about gun ownership. I think that the right to a citizen that does not have any kind of mental health issues or does not have their rights taken away to own a gun by some sort of law should have the ability to own a gun with and have some sort of responsible, you know, licensing and whatever to do it. The problem I have is that when you say that the right to own a gun should be completely and totally absolute, there shouldn't be any background checks and do all these things, you're not actually pushing forward the law's intent to have citizens be able to have guns once you're responsible. What you're doing is by saying this absolute gun ownership and not have these checks and balances in there, you're defeating the purposes of the laws that we have on the books to keep people that have mental health issues, to keep people that have criminal backgrounds and things like that. They don't need to have guns in their hands. And I don't know why there should be a lobby or an owner or anything else that says that they should, because that's actually going against the law that's already on the books.
That's that Ice Cube theory. That's why they don't want even something that makes sense to be in there. And that's where the whole argument falls apart. If you can't agree to something like that, like let's put checks in place so that people that have mental issues can't get guns, or at least we can lessen the chance of them getting guns.
Yeah.
If you can't agree to that, then there's no sense in even having a discussion.
No. And that's kind of where I split my time with the NRA. And that's why I should write a book. My Time with the NRA by Michael Meadows.
But that's where I got to agree with what Biden said, even though he was kind of chastised for it. These people that their argument is, well, we have to arm ourselves against a tyrannical government. Well, first of all, that tyrannical government wants you to arm yourself right now. They're the ones that are saying own all the guns you want. But the other thing is, okay, take all the guns you can carry, go out in your front yard, and take on that Black Hawk helicopter that's bearing down on you. If the government really wants to take you out, they can take you out. You're not going to arm yourself to do anything about it.
Haven't you seen Red Dawn? Don't you know what happens when a group of high school students with their like-minded and inspired can do?
Yeah, but those were Russians, and I've seen them drive cars, and they all crash into each other. They don't have a good traffic system. They would shortly just wreck into each other and all of them. Of course, they don't die. They're tough. They're tough bastards. They don't die. They wreck at high speeds and just fly out the windshield and walk away.
Unless their shoes fall off, and then they definitely have died if their shoes fall off. So the amount of dash cams in Russia amazes me.
It does, me too. I still watch these things and just am absolutely amazed. And I'm glad they have their own curse words, though, because you see them, you're in the car there, they crash, the windshield cracks, and you hear, Bledno, Yom Tonga, Hulo. And yeah, I know they're cussing, but I don't know what it is, so it's not offensive.
That sounds like some dialogue from The Mandalorian, Tommy.
Well, maybe they speak Mandalorian. I don't know. I thought it was Russian. It might be Mandalorian for all I know.
My junior year of high school, we had a Russian foreign exchange student, and he played soccer with us, and I became pretty good friends with him. And so, of course, what do high school students ask of each other, boys in particular? Teach me how to curse in Russian. So he taught me one phrase in particular that was extremely vulgar, and it's still burned in my brain today. And so tucked that away for about 7 or 8 years. I was at a convenience store, and I was talking to the guy behind the counter, and he said he was Russian. I said, oh, you're Russian. And he's like, yeah. I was like, I know one Russian phrase. And I said it, and he just kind of looked at me and said, you need to leave. it was so dirty. He was just, it just offended his sensibilities. And I felt like such a jerk, such a not nice person for doing it. But I was like, oh, whoops, maybe I shouldn't have said that. But
well, let me give you a little hint, counselor. If you ever go to Russia, don't display your Russian language knowledge.
I will not.
But the reason that surprised me is when I played intramural soccer, most of the soccer teams were made up of the foreign students because they were better at soccer. They all played soccer in their homelands. Whereas that was in my day, nobody played soccer around here. You didn't have soccer teams or anything. Yeah. Now it's a lot better, but then nobody played soccer. Yeah. So we were terrible. But they would be out there and they'd be running around and you'd hear them going in their language, not understanding a word. Then you'd hear an American curse word. bleep, bleep, bleep you. And but all the rest of the words were their language. The only thing they had were our curse words. Don't they have their own curse words?
That's funny. Oh, I think it's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is a part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal questions about what we talked about. And if I'm being perfectly honest today, I kind of forgot to do it. I forgot to brief my legal briefs. So I'm going to shoot straight from the hip here, asking you some legal questions.
You forgot your briefs?
I forgot my briefs today.
Well, that could get very chilly.
It can. And airy, very airy. A lot of breeze blowing through there.
Yeah.
So.
Breeze through the knees.
So, the Attorney General has filed something in New York to start the lawsuit against the NRA. What is that document called?
A lawsuit.
What? How do you start a lawsuit?
You file a, I don't know, it's an existential challenge for the NRA.
Well, I've talked about it quite a bit. I said it was 170 pages. I read from it quite a bit.
Well, I thought it was a lawsuit.
Yeah, but how do you start a lawsuit?
You file a filing.
Okay, so we have done probably 200 episodes.
Well, this is 200. This is number 200.
Of course.
So you're right on the money on that.
It's my internal clock. It's very, very accurate.
Yeah.
So we've done 200 episodes of court-appointed And if I said, Tommy, I need you to go file a lawsuit for me, can you draft the... You don't know what
I'm talking complaint?
About. Yes.
The complaint? So they filed a complaint?
They filed a complaint.
Just like you do against your neighbors when they're making too much noise?
Oh, I thought I had absolutely failed you as a as an attorney in trying to instruct you about the law.
Well, you have, but that's all right. It's just because I'm not very good.
Well, let me ask you this. How do you respond to a complaint? What do?
You give an answer.
Thank goodness. That's right. You file an answer. Dear Lord. Okay.
And then you file a countersuit, apparently.
You always file a countersuit.
And then somebody else files another complaint against you. And it's whoever complains the most wins.
That's right. Yeah. It's all about complaints.
That's the American way. That's the American way.
Okay. I got one more question, and I'm just going to cut it short because that took all my energy.
But you're too scared to ask any more after that.
At the very end, when you're asking for what you want from the court in a complaint, what do you call that?
Relief.
Yeah, but there's kind of a somewhat antiquated type phrasing for it.
Summary judgment.
No, summary judgment would be what you would file if there's no disputed material facts and the law's on your side. But and that wouldn't be until later on. But it's called a prayer for relief.
Hakuna Matata.
A prayer for relief.
A prayer for relief?
Yeah, it's called the prayer. It's for relief. So
it's like you're throwing up a Hail Mary.
You're praying. Well, all lawsuits are. All you need is, the filing fee and an attitude, and you're ready to go.
A prayer for relief.
Yep.
Man, that sounds like you don't have a prayer. It's like a Bon Jovi song.
You might not. And then what is the final thing that is always included in the prayer for relief if you're trying to cover all your bases?
Your results that you want, the action to be taken.
Right, but then you say, I want any other relief.
Anything else that you want to give me in there that I might have forgot to mention, I want that too.
Yeah, exactly.
The kitchen sink in case it's available.
The kitchen sink clause.
I don't want to leave him with nothing. I want to take it all.
That's right. So, that was an interesting section of legal briefs. I thought I was throwing you a softball there. I didn't know what happened. I was like, come on.
Hey, there are no softballs where I'm involved. If I got to come up with an answer, there's a soft head.
There you go. So this is episode 200, huh?
I'm pretty sure. I haven't uploaded any in a while, but I think it's been a while since I've had to upload anything. Hopefully we'll do better in the future, but I think this is right at 200.
Yeah, well, congratulations. Cheers.
Well, same to you. We're starting our fifth year.
Is it 5 years?
Yeah. Can you believe that?
Well, that's right. Because, we've been pretty diligent about putting them out every week. So
yeah.
Until recently, but yeah.
Yeah, until recently, and you got too busy.
I have been so busy.
I've been working on plans to start a different podcast so that I'll have something to do.
Oh, no. What are you doing?
I haven't finalized them. I'm just thinking.
Can you have a teaser? You want to throw it out there for our listeners?
No, I'm not even far enough along that. No, it's still in the debate stage.
You're not even in the teaser?
No, I'm not even ready for a teaser or a trailer.
Well,
I do, you'll be the first to know.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it. I appreciate it, partner.
All right, dude.
Well, congratulations on 200, Tommy.
Same to you. Couldn't have done it without you. Because it'd just be a dude talking about stuff he doesn't know about.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Bim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out, though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello, welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is logic. I have always taken great pride in the fact that I am a logical person. I don't draw on emotion as my main point of emphasis in an argument or debate. I use facts and logic because, to me, that is the only thing that makes sense. I have often said that I could argue either side of a debate with equal enthusiasm, because I understand the logic and the arguments for each. To me, it is like being a good investigator. Just follow the facts, and it will lead you to the answer or the truth. My problem is, logic no longer matters. This is a world of emotion, factions, and extremes. I don't like any of those components to make a decision with. It is a fact that over 170,000 people have died from COVID. So there are only two paths from there. One, we simply accept that more people will die and we are fine with it. Or two, we take actions to try and prevent it. We did shut everything down to try and help, and it did for a while, but there was no coordination, so some shut down and some didn't. It wrecked the economy and put millions out of work. For nothing, really. It just delayed the worst of it a bit. But then we jumped right back into normal because some politicians were worried about an election and needed dollars flowing again. Then scientists say that if we would just all wear masks, the virus would be greatly reduced and thousands of lives will be saved. I believe scientists. They have no motivation to just prank us, and wearing a mask is not that big of a sacrifice. I mean, that is logical, isn't it? Then there is also the fact that we wear masks for our fellow man. If it just meant you were doing it to protect you yourself, and you chose not to, but it didn't affect others, then go for it. Who cares? If you don't care about you, why should I? But it is about keeping others safe. So when you are refusing to wear a mask, you are basically saying F you to everyone else you encounter. That's a logical assumption, isn't it? Remember that decision when you need help later, when this is behind us. And it will be at some point, and at a great human cost. Remember, you couldn't be bothered with putting a mask on to prevent infecting others. You say it is your God-given right, or your constitutional right, to not wear one. I don't agree with either of those premises. I don't think God ever said F you to all of us, so I don't think he would bestow that right upon you. As far as the Constitution, it has plenty of stuff in there about our responsibility to each other and to our government to live as free and decent citizens of a free society. Free does not mean reckless, and I don't know why it is interpreted that way. Isn't that logical? Here is the biggest lack of logic that completely befuddles me. How is wearing a mask a political issue? Of the 170,000 that died, I bet there are as many Republicans as Democrats. The virus doesn't care what party you belong to or how you vote. So if you're going to take medical advice in a pandemic, are you going to believe scientists or politicians? Especially politicians that recommend drinking bleach or shining UV rays inside your body. Regardless of your political leanings, when faced with believing scientists or politicians, which should you listen to when deciding how to protect yourself and your family? You choose a scientist, right? I mean, isn't that logical, or am I missing something? Didn't all those people die? Or is that a left-wing hoax? I don't think so. Even though I said I could argue both sides of a debate with equal enthusiasm, because I understand the arguments and logic for each side, I lied, because on this matter, I cannot argue any legitimate or logical reason for not wearing a mask. I really hope that we can return to a world of logic, because I trust logic. I don't trust slogans or politicians or hate or bullying. And other than the virus, These are the things that seem to be in abundance. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.